The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
About 600 former Israeli security officials have signed an open letter urging US President Donald Trump to pressure Israel to end the war in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is considering further expansion of the military operations in Gaza, but the letter's authors say Hamas no longer poses a strategic threat to Israel. And as the humanitarian crisis in Gaza continues to worsen, activists and volunteers continue to provide aid. Last spring, Dr. Morgan McMonagall, a vascular trauma surgeon, returned from Gaza after his second trip there since the war began. He's still hearing from colleagues on the ground about the situation, and we'll talk to him in a few minutes' time. But first, we're joined by Sean Bell, a former fighter pilot, military analyst and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. Sean, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Now, can you talk to us, first of all, about the significance of those ex-security officials writing that open letter to Trump. I mean, will it have any effect, and what is its real purpose?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth setting a bit of context here. As a former military guy, you know, military is simply a means to an end. It isn't an end in itself. So you have to have an idea of what's the political end state that you want before you declare war and let loose your military operation. Now, at the moment, most of the international community believes that's a two-state solution. And that's what Hamas are effectively fighting for. They'd lay down their arms if a two-state solution was envisaged. But it's pretty clear that that's not what Prime Minister Netanyahu sees. And the challenge, of course, then is if you're kind of trying to destroy Hamas as a military guy, that's almost unachievable. You can't take out an ideology. And therefore, a lot of my IDF colleagues that I know have been saying this privately. Now it's come out more publicly that ultimately the military has done its job. It's now time for the politicians to step up. It needs some sort of compromise, but this is not going to stop if there is no military solution to what's left in Gaza.
Now, clearly, Hamas, I'm not sure how their political thinking really is, but releasing the video of starving hostages, you know, observably starving hostages, seems to have rebounded against them.
Yeah, I'm not here to justify one side or the other. I try very hard to look at it from a humanitarian, a human perspective here. The hostages are nothing more than bargaining chips for Hamas. They know that without those, they would face a very bleak future. And it's worth remembering 251 were taken on that fateful day back in the 7th of October, and there's only believed to be about 10%, well, 20 of those still alive. And the only way that those hostages are coming out alive, if you look at statistically, is through negotiation. It's not through fighting. And yet, continuing the military campaign, in effect, draws a line under those 20 hostages. And I think that's why so many people in Israel are so looking to Benjamin Netanyahu to find a way to negotiate a peace and get those hostages out.
Now, what the IDF people, you know, and, you know, privately and now more publicly are saying is that militarily, there's precious little else they can do to get the hostages back. They have destroyed, I suppose, most of the Hamas leadership, although new leaders will emerge. But there's very little that militarily they can accomplish from here on in, no matter what they do.
No, and I think that's certainly my view. And you talk about leadership of Hamas, it's like a hydra. You know, you cut off one head and there's going to be others that grow back. They're very accommodating. And it's worth remembering, even though we see the carnage above ground at Gaza, the Gaza metro, that labyrinth of tunnels which Hamas controls, my understanding is well over half of that is still operational. So it's incredibly difficult for the IDF to do any sort of military campaign. The danger, therefore, is you look at why is this campaign continuing if there's very little the military can do? And therefore, is there a subtext here? You know, Israel has been moving its way into the West Bank illegally, even by its own laws. Is this an effort for the Israeli Defense Forces to now move in, make life untenable for those residents of Gaza and gradually take it over in time and become a single state solution? Now, all of these are, who knows, but the fact is that there isn't a military solution. Therefore, pressure is increasing now diplomatically. That doesn't matter what our prime minister says, doesn't matter what your prime minister says. What matters is what America, the security guarantor for Israel, and that's why the pressure is increasing on Donald Trump.
And that pressure from people who used to be members of Shin Bet or Mossad or the IDF and some political figures. I mean, one wonders sometimes how much Trump reads himself or is told, because when he was talking about the starving children last week, he said he saw it on television, which it seems absolutely incomprehensible that the State Department officials and military officials would not have been briefing him as to the humanitarian situation in Gaza.
I agree. But again, there are always two sides to this. And you know full well, Pat, you know, the Israelis have been constantly saying there isn't a problem with hunger and starvation. There's loads of food there. The evidence on the ground is that there plainly is. And unfortunately, Israel doesn't allow access to the Gaza Strip by international journalists to be able to find out what's actually going on the ground. I think also, if you do step back a little bit from this, what is actually Benjamin Netanyahu's objectives? You know, before this campaign, before the 7th of October, periodically Hamas would fire a few rockets, Israel would go in and deal them a blow, but the dust would settle again. But nothing was ever solved. On this particular, ever since the 7th of October, you know, Netanyahu's had a go at Hezbollah and actually taken the guts out of them. It's gone into Iran and actually dealt a very difficult blow to them. I think Netanyahu sees this as a once-in-a-generation opportunity to solve the problem. The danger is, I think he's mistaken in thinking he can go any further in Gaza, because I reiterate, I don't see there's any military solution to what's left.
And he obviously is conscious of the pressure, the public pressure, the international pressure on Trump, you know, hearing it from his own Republican support, that they're hearing it from their constituencies, because at last pictures of starving children are making it onto American television. So watching the way the wind is blowing, I don't know whether you noticed over the weekend, they sacked the Attorney General, who was the person leading the prosecution of Netanyahu, presumably to put someone else in who will drop that prosecution, thereby perhaps allowing him to stop the war.
Well, one of the things that's been fascinating is that, again, you know, by talking to some of the IDF folks I know, whenever they get to the bottom of it, they turn around and say, this is all about now, Netanyahu and his survival in power. And therefore, you know, however unseemly that is, somehow you've got to unpick that and find a way through it. I do think what's been fascinating, though, is that the stories of devastation, the humanitarian crisis, and now anybody who's a parent seeing what those poor children are going through, it just seems horrendous. And there has to be a way of bringing this to a halt. And the international leaders, Netanyahu and Trump, do have it within their power to do that. And I think that's why the pressure's ramping up.
Sean, thank you very much for that update, and trying to get a handle on what actually is going through Netanyahu's head, given all the different pressures coming at him from all sides, except from one. It looks like Donald Trump is the one not applying a significant pressure there. And now I want to talk to Dr. Morgan McMonagall, vascular trauma surgeon. Morgan, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, you were over there a couple of times, but you're still in touch with those who are soldiering on the ground, medically speaking.
Yeah, I've been there twice, and I came back in March of this year, a couple of weeks after the ceasefire was breached. And although things were deteriorating while I was there because there was a blockade on supplies getting in, things have obviously, as we've seen on television, continued to get worse and worse and worse, to the point where the entire enclave is now food short. And like everything else, there's obviously going to be a tier, and the poorest people are now starving, and the hospital are seeing children and adults coming in who have been harmed by a lack of food. And that is a definition of starvation, yes.
At what point does that starvation become irreversible?
Oh, it's really hard to know, because as you've seen, you know, parachuting food in, which is ridiculous and the most expensive and dangerous way to do it, there might be enough to keep a certain proportion of the population alive. And like with everything else, when there is a large population involved, whether it's infectious diseases or starvation, evolution will take over, natural evolution, and some people will survive it, but many will not. But it's certainly getting to the point where for a lot of people who are in the so-called humanitarian zone, which is declared an area that's meant to be safe, the proportion of those who are dying from starvation and lack of food and lack of clean drinking water is disproportionate. So I think we are at tipping point now. But every time we see the world speak up and we see the press put some more pictures out and people are disgusted, give it a few days and there are more bombardments and there's more killing and there's more shooting.
But it does show that it shows that the Israelis are sensitive to international public opinion, because they do, you know, they brought in these pauses so that aid could get in, however inadequate that was. But that was directly due to public pressure.
Well, we don't know what it was due to, really. Is it enough food to keep them alive? Because it is also cruel and inhuman to keep people starving, but give them enough food and water just to keep them alive. So I don't know if public pressure really has made a difference, when you can see, I mean, the repugnancy of what has happened in the last 18 months or so. I don't think that there is any an ounce of humanitarianism coming from the Israeli government towards the people of Gaza. Mm. So I don't believe for a second that suddenly they turn around and decide to be all charitable about giving them some more food, because they're not giving enough food.
And the method of distribution through the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is an American-Israeli idea, you know, where they have, what was it, four locations for distribution of food, whereas the United UNRWA there had 400. And that's what you require. You require this dispersal of food to where the people are. The idea of having, you know, biblical movements of people from A to B to try to get food, and then finding them subject to attack, random attack, it seems, by Israeli people, IDF, perhaps others, picking them off almost like target practice.
Yeah, so, well, you allow... It's about control. It's about control of a mass population. So as long as you allow the controllers to keep control of everything, including food, then you can turn that tap on and off as you wish, as you see fit. If you're really going to address any humanitarian crisis, whether it happens from a natural disaster or in this case, a human disaster, you allow people to become self-sufficient to a certain degree. And self-sufficiency means being able to feed themselves and giving them the supplies to feed themselves, rather than making them line up in the most undignified way and to turn on and turn off the opening hours of the distribution when and whenever you like.
Now, the idea of avoiding whatever looting does take place, and there's no doubt that anyone with a gun probably can rob a bag of flour from anyone without a gun, whether they're Hamas or any of the other armed factions. And the only way to stop that is to flood the zone with food.
Yes, absolutely. Flood it with food, because people are starving. So people are desperate. Of course, desperate people will do desperate things. There are parents who've been killed going to obtain food to feed their family. A friend of mine told me he's getting his children to lick salt at nighttime to try and get rid of the pangs of hunger, to try and help them sleep at nighttime. And he himself is surviving on one small meal a day in the hospital where he goes in. There are rumours that some gangs are being paid to loot, to make it look like there's all law and order is on, and to make it look like certain groups are actually controlling it. But the bottom line is, you've got a population of over 2 million people in an area the size of Manhattan who cannot leave. The actual zone that they can't go into is increasing every day. So the area they're allowed in is shrinking every single day. They can't get food. They can't get drinking water. They've got no hygiene. And now what we're seeing is a rise in the hospitals of a lot of infectious diseases that are untreatable or too late to treat them because people are starving, because there's no hygiene. Interestingly, they have not reported any epidemics of polio or measles, because before the ceasefire was broken, Palestine or Gaza Strip in particular were on their third round of polio and measles vaccinations. So they were allowed to bring those in, but not anything else at the time, because I believe, and many people believe, that they did not want polio and measles breaking out from Gaza into Israel,
which
but
would
now
inevitably pass
other
into
diseases
Israel.
Rising up. Now, of course it would, and we started with COVID.
One of the cruelest aspects of this is the fact that there is absolutely no infant formula in Gaza, and that if you, as a doctor, decided to pack your suitcase with infant formula, it would be taken off you at the border by the Israelis.
Yeah, and I mean, that wasn't my experience because I wasn't bringing it in at the time, but I have been in touch with other doctors from the UK and America who have had infant formula taken off them, along with other things like money, if they're bringing in dollars, anything that would help the ordinary person who is now desperate you know, so desperate, they can't even feed their children anymore. And I do think we're at tipping point. Maybe Israel allow enough food in just to keep it from tipping over, which is also cruel in itself. But either way, the world is watching a crisis unfolding, and we have been for the last 18 months.
And no doubt there will be people after this is resolved, however, whether it's by a mass genocide or whether it's by peace talks or a ceasefire, whatever it is, there'll be people who deny all knowledge of the full extent of what was going on in Gaza. And of course, there are no international journalists in there to report on it, because they're not allowed in.
Well, that's exactly right. There's no journalist. Well, yes, there's no international journalists. And again, you know, it is part of one of our human rights of expression, which includes journalism, to allow them in to report the truth. Because at the end of the day, it's only about the truth. So instead, it's left up to people like myself and many of my colleagues from the UK and the USA to speak out, when really our job is to provide humanitarian assistance when we're there. But now we have no choice but to at least speak out to what we're seeing. And it's all fact-based. It's not about pointing fingers. It's not about blame. It's just about saying this is what is going on. And we have been there and we've seen it. And I really think the West has been looking at, and the European Union, we've let ourselves down, really, that we continue to supply arms and parts of arms for Israel for the use in Gaza, which is not a military itself, which is not a sovereign power, so it's not an even playing field. And, you know, the very principle of human rights that was based on what happened during the Second World War, we're now standing back and watching. And the day will come when we look behind and say, well, I was against it all along. But really, you know, if someone doesn't speak out, then are you really against it?
Morgan McGonigal, a vascular trauma surgeon, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.